This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Next, we've got the Spotlight on Grenache. In this Spotlight on Grenache, we're going to look at three elements. We're going to look at the general characteristics of the grape. We're going to look at the winemaking processes that it often undergoes and the styles of wine that it produces. And we're going to look at the key regions that produce Grenache wines. So let's start off with some general characteristics about Grenache. And probably the most important thing about Grenache is it is a grape variety that likes it warm to hot climates, particularly hot, dry climates. It's a late ripening grape variety, which means it needs a fairly long summer to get it nice and fully ripe. And if you're in a warm to hot climate, particularly a Mediterranean climate where you may come out of winter quite early, that extra length of time is quite important so that you don't harvest your grapes in the heat of summer. Grenache is also quite drought tolerant, another problem you get with Mediterranean climates. Mediterranean climates often have hot, dry summers. If it does rain, it tends to rain in the winter. So drought can be a very common problem in a Mediterranean climate. And Grenache, with its late ripening and its drought tolerance, means that it's absolutely superb for this. The other factor that Grenache has, it has thin skins. And in a wet climate, such as a maritime climate that you might get at Bordeaux or Hawke's Bay, then these thin-skinned grape varieties can really be susceptible to molds and mildews, and they'll tend to pop open and spew the juice everywhere, creating more moisture, creating more molds and mildews. So thin-skinned grape varieties aren't particularly good in wet climates, so a dry Mediterranean climate is absolutely perfect. The other thing that comes out of that thin skin is you're not going to get a lot of colour and you're not going to get a lot of tannins out of it in a Grenache grape variety. Grenache tends to be on the lower end of colour, tends to be on the lower end of tannins. That's not to say you can't extract a lot of them if you want to, but you run the risk of it over-extracting the grapes and getting a lot of bitterness in your wine. Other characteristics of the grape is Grenache tends to be quite a low-acid grape variety. It also tends to have quite high levels of alcohol. Low acid, high alcohol, that's your classic recipe for a full-bodied wine. And Grenache is typically quite a full-bodied wine with soft tannins usually associated with those thin skins and not over-extracting them. Flavor-wise, you get a lot of red fruits, spiciness sometimes, and sometimes a little bit of herbiness as well. Now, so a wine that sort of lacks a little bit of tannins, maybe very high in alcohol, and lacks a little bit of acidity, means that as a general drinking single varietal wine, you don't see a lot of Grenache by itself. It tends to be a wine that's blended a lot. And in that blending, it's giving body, it's giving red fruits, but also the other wines in the blend are hopefully giving it a bit more acidity, a little bit more colour, a little bit more tannins, you know, a little bit more structure to the wine. So if you think about what grape varieties give that are also quite well adapted to a warm Mediterranean environment, you're looking at things like Serra, Mourvedre, Carignan, Sanso. So they're the sort of classic grape varieties you might blend with it. Okay, let's talk a wee bit about the winemaking techniques you often use with Grenache. And as I said, it's often de-stemmed and crushed and a little bit of pre-fermentation maceration. You want to extract as much colour and flavours from the skins as possible, and you don't want to over-extract the tannins because, as I say, there's not a lot there. So usually you'll give a lot of pre-fermentation maceration. Some people call this cold soaking. It's where you leave the crushed grapes in contact with the juice and you're extracting colour and flavours, but not tannins. So pre-fermentation maceration, very, very common. You've got to watch out with Grenache because of those high alcohol levels. As the alcohol ramps up during the fermentation, you're going to find that alcohol is a solvent for tannins and it'll start extracting loads and loads of tannins towards the end of the fermentation. So you've got to be really careful about your temperature control as you get closer to the end of the fermentation. Really high alcohols will extract lots of tannins and it'll extract lots of bitter tannins in particular. So people need to be really super careful about that. And that's another reason why you might do a pre-fermentation maceration. You will see occasionally premium Grenache having some post-fermentation maceration to enhance the tannin structure. Not only does post-fermentation maceration enhance tannin structure, it can actually change the nature of the tannins a little bit as well and make them a little bit more malleable. So some premium Grenache might do a little bit of post-ferm maceration, but it's not common at all. One thing they sometimes do to enhance the red fruit flavor in the wines, you'll often see people chuck in some whole bunches with some crushed fruit. This creates a sort of carbonic maceration. And carbonic maceration is where the grapes undergo an intercellular fermentation. So it's doing a fermentation inside the grape itself. And after a period of time, those grapes will eventually explode, releasing their flavors. But the whole bunches with a lot of crushed fruit, you won't get carbonic maceration flavors typically, you know, bubblegum, candy floss, those type of things. But what you'll often see is it creates brighter fruits in the wine. So you'll find that the fruit will be sharper and more zingy, if you like, from doing a whole bunch with crushed fruit, carbonic style maceration. When you are doing your fermentation, you will tend to do gentle cap management. And quite often that's things like gently punching down the cap. So you're going to get the juice in contact with the skins as much as possible to do extraction. But you don't want to over-extract. So just gently punching the cap down from time to time. Now, if you're doing punching down, that leads you to tend to do open top fermenters. And that can be in stainless steel or concrete. It doesn't really matter too much. Having open top fermenters means you can get in there and push the cap down inside into the juice. Sometimes I'll do the alcoholic fermentation in large old oak tanks as well. But again, the key thing is to have an open top so you can do your punching down. Some producers may age their Grenache in old French oak barrels. Often in Alsace, these big old barrels are called foudres, or big tanks if you like. You don't tend to use a lot of new oak with Grenache dominated blends, simply because Grenache doesn't tend to take new oak particularly well. After you've made your wine, blending becomes very important. As I said, Grenache lacks acidity, it lacks tannins and depth of colour usually. So you're looking for blending partners that grow well in a warm Mediterranean or hot Mediterranean climate. And that's things like Carignan and Mourvedre. And in some of the cooler areas, still warm Mediterranean, you might see Syrah as well. Another reason you might blend is if you're in a very warm place or even a hot climate, Grenache can become a little bit too jammy and the alcohol gets a little bit too high and out of balance. So by bringing in some of these other grape varieties like Carignan and Mourvedre, you're going to add some fresher fruit to the blend and maybe a little bit of tannins and color as well. As I said, in the cooler areas and a warm Mediterranean climate, you may also use a little bit of Syrah. Yeah, if you think about it, in terms of the ripeness of the three grape varieties, Syrah likes the coolest climate, Grenache in the middle, and Mourvedre even warmer. Depending on the site, you'll choose Syrah, Grenache, or Mourvedre. Now, if we have a look at the regions, Southern Rhone and Southern France are the only two regions in France where the climate is warm enough and dry enough for Grenache to thrive. In Southern Rhone, Grenache is certainly the most widely planted grape variety, and those warm Mediterranean summers allow the grape to get fully ripe. As I said, you just got to watch out that it doesn't get too ripe with those baked jammy flavours. Also in Southern Rhone, drought is very common. Anywhere where you've got a Mediterranean climate, you're going to expect some drought from time to time, and because Grenache is drought tolerant, it tends to do quite well in this region. Now, the Southern Rhone is a big, big flat area, and there's not a lot of room for wind breaks and protection of winds. And in particular, there's a wind that comes down through the Rhone Valley, and when it hits the Southern Rhone, it just accelerates and gets really quite viciously strong. And it's called the Mistral. And the Mistral is this cold wind coming from the north that really is quite strong, and it tends to knock the vines around quite a lot. In fact, that wind can really damage things like posts and wires from time to time. So quite often, Grenache is grown quite low to the ground to avoid the wind, and also as a bush vine, because then you don't have those posts and wires that are going to get knocked around. So because of the Mistral, Grenache does tend to do quite well as a bush vine in southern Rhone. The other thing they'll do is they'll plant some windbreaks in southern Rhone. So you might see rows of trees acting as a windbreak just to take the edge off the wind. Some grape varieties like Syrah, for example, doesn't tend to do well as a bush vine. And as a result, some of the grape varieties in the southern Rhone will have to be on wires. But you just got to accept a little bit more damage to your stakes and wires. Now, your classic Rhone blend, it's got Grenache, which gives you that sort of spiced red fruits, alcohol, and body. But as I said, lacks colour, tannins, and acidity. Syrah will give you colour and tannins. But it can be a little bit hot in southern Rhone for Syrah. So Mourvèdre in the warmer spots will give you colour and tannins and lots of black fruit flavours. And if the wine ages, it may get into sort of gamey, meaty flavours. But Mourvèdre in southern Rhone is at a sort of cool limit. It's only grown in the really warm sites in southern Rhone. The other supporting grape variety you'll see from time to time is Sanso. And Sanso gives red fruits, colour and tannins. In fact, Grenache and Sanso is a very common blending component for rosé wines. So you'll see rosé wines coming from southern Rhone, and they've got a lot of Grenache in them, and they've got a lot of Sanso. When you're making rosé wines, there's three ways you could do it. You can do it like they do in Provence to make those very delicate, very pale-coloured wine. That's called direct pressing. You get the grapes into the winery, and as soon as you can, you press them and get them off the skins. You will get a little bit of colour bleed, and that will create these very delicate Provence rosé-style wines. Another way is where they do a little bit of skin contact. So you get the grapes, you'll crush them, and you'll leave them in contact with the skins for a period of time. And that's how they make the rosé wines in Tavel and Lirac. And those wines often have a little bit of tannin structure and a lot more colour as well than you would expect from, say, a Provence rosé. And certainly Tavel in particular and Lirac are the two famous sort of rosé wines from the southern Rhone. Tavel, until Provence sort of came along, used to be considered France's top rosé wine. It's ages, it's got all sorts of interesting characteristics. It's definitely a different style of rosé and something worth experimenting with. The third way of making rosé wines, which is generally bland in Europe, except for in Champagne, is where you take a red wine and you add it to a white wine and blend it that way to make a rosé wine. Now, if we look at southern Rhone, perhaps the most famous region and Grenache-based region in southern Rhone is Châteauneuf-du-Pape, the chateau of the new pope, if you like, the Châteauneuf-du-Pape. Châteauneuf-du-Pape is a full-bodied, spicy, red fruits, high-alcohol wine. It is definitely a blend. Up to 13 grape varieties are allowed in the blend. But again, it's those classic ones, Syrah, Mourvèdre, etc. that are in the blend. Sometimes you'll see 100% Grenache used in a Châteauneuf-du-Pape. Be careful, because Châteauneuf-du-Pape is such a famous region, there is a lot of dilute, unbalanced wines. You know, if you've got a lot of Grenache in your blend, you're going to have very high alcohol levels if you're not careful, and that can just become an unbalanced wine. So there's some excellent Châteauneuf-du-Pape. There's also, if you don't spend enough, you'll get something quite disappointing. Now, Châteauneuf-du-Pape isn't the only Grenache-dominated red wine from southern Rhone. You will see some other regions. I often call them lookalikes because they make a wine very similar to Châteauneuf-du-Pape. And that's things like Vacherais, Gigondas, and Lirac. They can all produce very nice red wines based on Grenache. Lirac and Tavel, as I said earlier, can make rosé wines. Again, that's sort of a Grenache-Sanso blend. Now, I said that in southern Rhone, grapes are often planted quite low to the ground to avoid the Mistral wind. Another reason sometimes they'll get planted quite low to the ground is because there's a lot of stones in the southern Rhone. If you think about what the southern Rhone is, it's the bottom end of the Rhone River. And in Northern Rhone, it's basically a gorge, and the river flows through that gorge. And as it hits the Southern Rhone, it opens up into this big floodplain, which means that any of the stones that have been knocked off the rocks and the mountains come down the river, and then they get deposited in this big floodplain. So you see a lot of stones in the Southern Rhone, and in particular in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, they call these stones goulets. And the idea is you get the grapes nice and low to the ground, these big pudding stones, these big round stones, heat up during the day, radiating heat back into the vineyard in the evenings and at nighttime, extending the growing day and adding to the ripeness of the wines. So you plant them low to the ground to avoid the mistral and also to get a little bit of warmth coming in from the soils. Now, I did start with Grenache, but in actual fact, most people think that Grenache originally is a Spanish grape variety. And in Spain, it's known as Garnacha or Garnacha Tinta. And while in Spain, Tempranillo may be king, Grenache is a very important supporting grape variety, and Tempranillo and Grenache can be quite a natural blending partner. Because a lot of Spain, particularly on the east coast, as you come down the east coast, that is a warm Mediterranean climate, drought prone, etc. So absolutely superb Grenache growing conditions. So you're going to see a lot of Grenache on that east coast, Humilier, Valencia, Priorat, all these sort of regions where you've got a dry Mediterranean climate, you're going to see Grenache grown there. Up in the north in Catalonia, the most famous region that grows Grenache in Spain is probably Priorat. These wines are dry and they tend to come from old vines that are very low yielding. Now, you've got to be a little bit careful with old vines. There's no legal definition of what an old vine is. I could say vines that are 5 years old that are old vines. Wouldn't really give the impression of what an old vine is, but there's no legal requirement. Typically, most people would say an old vine is probably around 40 years or so, because normally vines have a natural life cycle and they get replanted every 40, 50 years as their yield decreases. When a vine's quite young, it'll produce quite a lot of fruit. As the vine ages, that yield naturally decreases. And at around 40 or 50 years old, a winery will go, okay, it's time to replace these vines. It might be because there's a lot of disease pressure in the vineyard and also the yield's dropping off. So you'll start to see people grubbing up vines and replacing them. So usually, once you get to about 40, 50 years, people can often say, well, I've kept my vines past their normal replacement period, so I'm going to call them old vines now. And that would be fair enough. So be careful, though. You know, old vines, it has no meaning. And unless you know the vineyard and you know that they're a reputable company that would use the term appropriately, you just need to be careful about old vines. That said, there's a lot of old vines in Priorat. Originally, the area was farmed, and then people gave up because it's on quite steep slopes. Steep slopes are hard to work. They're expensive. And when wine was super cheap in Spain, there was no demand for expensive wines from Priorat. Thankfully, some people went back up into the hills in Priorat, and they got them back into production. And these old vines are now producing wines that are both deep in colour, lots of tannins, black fruit, and French oak. So it's almost an opposite of what you might think of as a normal Grenache. You know, you think about Grenaches, lighter in colour, lacks tannins, lacks acidity, red fruits, not really good with French oak. Well, Priorat is almost the opposite, and that could be because of the blending partners. It's often blended with Carignana, and occasionally now you're actually seeing a little bit of Cabernet Sauvignon coming into your Priorat blend. Now, I did say that Priorat has low yields, which produce concentrated fruit. And part of that reason is the vines are very old, but also the soils. And in particular, the soils known as Licoralia. And Licoralia soils are red slate soils with mica in them. And the red slates heat up, radiate heat back into the vineyard, so you're getting a lot of warmth coming through. Probably more importantly, the soils are very low nutrient, but they hold on to enough water to get you through the summer. So they're very deep soils with reasonable water holding properties. and they're very low nutrients. So you're not going to get lots and lots of yield. You add that with old vines and you find your yield is very low, creating lots and lots of concentrated wines. Deep color, high tannins, black fruit, French oak, as I said. In Spain, Grenache is used a lot for rosé wines. Rosado, as they say in Spanish. Probably the most famous red wine region in Spain is Rioja. Not necessarily the best wines out of Spain, but certainly the most famous region. And the four grape varieties there is Tempranillo, and let's not muck around. Tempranillo is a very, very key, important grape variety, certainly more important than Grenache in Spain. But Tempranillo, you've got Garnacha, and then you've got Graciano and Monzuelo. And in Rioja, I like to think of it as the four A's. That's the way I remember it, the four A's. You've got three regions in Rioja. You've got Alta and Alvisa, and you've got Rioja Baja as well. Now, Alta and Alvisa are influenced by the Atlantic and altitude. Both of these things cool the climate down. Now, it makes it a little bit too cold and a little bit too wet for Grenache to really thrive there. So Garnacha or Grenache tends to be grown in Rioja Baja, where it's warmer and there's more shelter from the Pyrenees, so you don't see that Atlantic and altitude influence coming in here. I always tell my students, always remember the four A's. Alta, Alvisa equals Atlantic and altitude, whereas Rioja Baja has none of that, so it's noticeably warmer. And Rioja Baja tends to grow Grenache. It also tends to grow Graciano as well, which is a great variety you probably don't hear of very much, but Graciano, I think, is one of Spain's, and particularly Rioja's, top grape variety. It produces really stonkingly good wines, and you definitely, if you have a chance, try 100% Rioja Graciano. You'll also see Grenache grown in Navarra, which is right next door to Rioja. Navarra has a climate very similar to Rioja Baja, where it's drier, more suitable for Garnacha to thrive. They will grow a bit of Tempranillo there, but you'll also see Grenache-dominated Rosado or Rosé wines there. Now, unlike a lot of grape varieties, because it tends to only grow in warm Mediterranean climates, you don't see it all over the world. The only other country that has a particular reputation for Grenache is Australia. And here, you're going to see some old vines in places like Barossa and McLaren Vale. Here, they'll tend to blend the wines with Syrah. They do have Mourvedre in Australia. The Aussies call it Mataro, Mourvedre, Mataro. In Spain, they call Mourvedre Monastrell. So again, it can be a blending partner to Grenache, but these old vine Grenaches that you see in McLaren Vale and Barossa Valley are probably the most famous expressions in Australia of Grenache. Right, that pretty much ends our look at Grenache.